Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show. What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with...
Coach Nick.
Coach Nick, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Very good, how are you?
I'm really well. At the time of recording this, it's week one of the May Challenge.
Wow,
it's kicked off to start. We've gone through prep week and now we're in week one. So it's exciting times for everybody, right?
Oh, so exciting. Week one, day two we have.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, many of us have gone through prep week and spent some time to look at the training plans, look at the nutrition plans, start to digest some of the information on the challenge website, of course, asking lots of questions. And, you know, we've been spending most of the past week answering questions on Facebook, on Instagram, on the forums and everything in between, right?
Just trying to sort everybody out so everyone can get started.
Yeah, so look, let's go through a little bit of a challenge update. So you look, we're on week one and the theme of the week for week one is all about mindset, right? So in prep week, it's all about the environment, this idea that, you know, we want to be setting up our environment to make the challenge helpful for us. But the first step, or the most important step, is to start to consider our mindset, right? Mm-hmm. Because change really starts from within. Sure, we want to be changing the outside, but we want to mentally make that change going, yes, I am now a fit person. Yes, I'm someone that wakes up at 5 a.m. Yes, I'm someone that likes to eat a salad at lunchtime and go for a walk as much as I can. Those types of things. We want to adopt that mindset.
Yep, those habits.
Now, of course, whenever we start something like the challenge, there is those feelings of anxiety, right? Feelings of overwhelmness. You know, there's lots of information, right? We've basically dumped you into the deep end of this new hobby, this new lifestyle. And for many, it's a big change. For some, it might be a small change. For some, you know, you might be doing 90% of the things already. A few modifications, off you go. But for others, you know, we're changing everything. We're talking about the steps that you do, the habits and routines that you have, the way that you think about your body, the way you think about food, the way you think about exercise, the way you think about your sleep, your water intake, all the things. And that could be really overwhelming.
Oh,
right?
So challenging, because, I mean, it even comes down to you might need to rearrange places in your house and look at what you're doing every single day. So that's very overwhelming at first.
Yeah. And look, I completely understand those that reach out to us and saying, well, it's too confusing. It's overwhelming. I can't do this, right? Mm. And I appreciate that. I understand that. But look, it's all about those small steps, right? Where every person that you see who is fit or healthy, or heck, any person that's involved in any hobby, from playing the piano to speaking Spanish or anything in between, they didn't get there overnight. And it's all about those small steps along the way. So if you're feeling overwhelmed right now, that's okay. Firstly, you're not alone, right?
It's normal.
It's normal. The next step is just to think about the small steps, right? You know, if you take a step back and zoom out, it's like, all right, well, what can I do today to get me that little bit closer? All right, so I look at my meal plan. For breakfast, I'm having oats, some protein, some milk, and maybe an apple. All right, I'm going to make some oats for breakfast, and that's going to be my breakfast. And then for lunch, you might have some grilled chicken, some rice, and some vegetables on the side. Okay, I can get some grilled chicken and some rice sorted. And then for dinner, there might be some pasta, some beef, and some vegetables. You might go, oh, well, some pasta and beef, I love making spaghetti bolognese. I can make spaghetti bolognese just with different portions and different foods inside of it. And then you've got some snacks on the side and maybe some supplements for your around your training if you're training that day.
Yeah, and you're walking, just go for a walk.
Yeah,
just enjoy the fresh air.
Start to take note of your step count. Mm. And then even with the training side of things, like some of the training programs for some might look really easy because they've been doing lots of training in the past, but for others it might be a really big commitment. Even the beginner program, being like, oh geez, I've got to go and work out for an hour or half an hour or whatever it is. And think about those small steps where you go, all right, well, today for the gym, maybe I'll do half of the beginner program because the full program is a little bit too much for me. Okay, well, that's your start. That doesn't mean that's your end and you're not a bad person because you only did half the workout, right? So it's all about those small steps to build us up. And before you know it, we're going to be in, you know, week 9, week 10, week 11, and you might be doing all the program. You're utilizing all of the spreadsheets, all the resources, all the information on the website, and it becomes part of you, right?
That's right. You don't want to do the all or nothing where you end up doing nothing just because you can't do it all at once, because nobody does everything at once.
No. And look, like considering our programs for a moment, we often get people messaging us or contacting us saying, oh, it's too confusing, it's overwhelming. And last night in our live video, I used the example of a textbook, right? So if you've gone to high school or university and you have a big textbook, if you open up that textbook, it's overwhelming. You don't know anything in it and you're flipping through, you're like, Jesus, nothing, none of this makes sense. But over the course of the term or the semester while you're studying, you know, you slowly start to make sense of the textbook. You know where all the you know, summaries are at the back, the questions and the quizzes and everything in between in that textbook. And you know, maybe in a different analogy, right now it's May and around the corner is tax time. For many of us, we choose to do our own taxes. And for some, that can be really overwhelming. And for others, we've spent some time to learn the tax system and how it all works. And it's a few clicks of the button where we've organized, we've done our bookkeeping, we've collected our receipts. And then when tax time comes around, it goes, oh, well, okay, I'm ready to go. I'm organized and this is simple. But if you didn't put in the homework, if you didn't do the reading, if you didn't take the steps to get yourself organized, of course it feels overwhelming, right?
That's the best analogy, because you know what? There'll be some accountants out there who are finding this overwhelming that would say to someone like me, come on, why don't you keep your receipts? Why don't you get that together? Why don't you, and why do you find your spreadsheet overwhelming of your, you know, all your tax details? So that's really good, because that's sort of the same thing that I could say back, but you know, we could say that to each other. It's like, when you've been in something for a long time, sometimes when you take a step back, you realize that you need to just approach it bit by bit. And there's nothing wrong with bit by bit, because you will actually get results bit by bit as well.
Absolutely.
That's the thing.
Absolutely. Like,
they're completely sustainable results as well, because it's something that you might just incorporate into your day bit by bit, take a few things out bit by bit, and you'll find that makes a change already.
Absolutely. And, you know, continuing on with this like analogy of a tax return, you know, we all know there's the idea of a simple tax return. You log onto somewhere like MyGov and you don't really claim anything. You make no extra things. You click, 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 and great, a simple tax return done. But as we kind of progress through life, maybe you've got a few investments, maybe you have a few deductions, maybe you're running a business and all these other extra things, it can become a little bit more complicated. And that's similar in the challenge. You could simply download the PDF and be on your way and just do a simple challenge. Or you can start to utilize all the tools that you can get the most return out of the challenge. And that might include, you know, you using the daily checking tool to monitor your body weight changes and your other biometrics. Maybe you start adding foods to the food database so that you can have more control over the template. Maybe you start using the technique tracking tool and watching all the videos and resources on the challenge website. So then you've turned your, you know, simple tax return where maybe you get $100 into this really complicated negative gearing deductions, depreciations, all the other like fancy words that accountants love, and you maybe get $1,000 as a tax return, right? So it's all about how much effort you want to put in, depends on how much results you get.
Do you know what I love about that as well? It's, you hit the nail on the head for this reason. This takes the emotion out of it, which is really helpful when you're trying to learn something new or plan something. So it takes that whole emotion of, I can't do it. It's fitness. I have to change my food. It's just a database. It's just a plan. It's just a template. The same as with tax. Because if we went to our accountants and said, I can't do it, which probably some of us do, you accountants out there would talk us down and go, well, let's just do it step by step.
Mm.
Let's go back and see what you've done. You know, that kind of a thing. So yeah. It's very, very similar. If you just try and take the emotion out of it and just look at it piece by piece, just like a tax return.
Just like a tax return. Mm-hmm. We're doing a fun tax return.
Yeah, I know. Right? Maybe for some people tax returns are fun because, like, you know. I'm not sure.
Well, look, Nick, let's talk about some non-scale victories for the week. So in this segment, you know, we're going to be talking about some good news in the challenge or some non-scale victories that we're starting to see within the challenge. And, you know, this could be someone on Facebook, on Instagram, on their journals, on the forum or something in between. So living the idea of, you know, sometimes the victory isn't on just the scales or just within our body, it can be something else. Mm-hmm. So my first nomination for the non-scale victory this week goes out to an old friend of mine, Mark Sibra. So Mark has done the challenge previously, and Mark previously got in the top 10. Got super lean, and Mark got really involved with park runs, right? So much so that we organized an end of challenge run around the town in Melbourne. Okay, this was a few challenges ago, maybe a year or more ago. And funnily enough, it was just myself and Mark that turned up, right? Yeah. I don't know, people don't like running around the town. Okay. But Mark at the time was really training, doing park runs every other day. And I, for one, hadn't done a run in a while. So Mark and I were running around the town and the guy beat me up the hill I think it's Claremont Street or wherever it is, that hill around the town.
Yeah.
So Mark beat me running around the town. Congratulations, Mark. However, Mark, you know, recently reached out to us on our Facebook group and highlighted that he's been in a little bit of a dark place over that COVID period and unfortunately put on a bit of weight, which happens to everyone. No matter what situation you're in, you know, there are some life instances that, you know, these things can happen.
Of course it happens.
So Mark put himself out there and you see a before and after of Mark where he has put on quite a bit of weight, but he's made himself accountable, which I think is a win, where, you know, he could have continued to live in the shadows or just hide or not make any posts or anything, but he's made himself accountable to our community. And I guarantee that because he's done that, he started to take more steps to improve his health and get himself back on his feet again. So
that's amazing. We can't wait to see your journey.
So Mark, if you're listening to this, let's catch up. And let's have a run. We'll have a run in 12 weeks and see.
I'll come too.
Maybe Nick will come as well.
I love that hill. So yeah. Good luck.
I've got another non-scale victory. It goes out to another challenger on the forums who's been answering lots of questions, trying to beat me to the questions. And that goes out to Jeremy Breyer. Jeremy, helping me out on the training thread, answering lots of challenger questions. So Jeremy, not being unseen, thanks for helping out, buddy. I really appreciate it.
It's really good when we get on there and we see that other people have been involved and offering some information that they know of themselves, and it's actually really good. It's amazing. It's really good.
Nick, do you have any non-scale victories?
I do. I love my Wednesday live group. So I see you guys obviously joining the Facebook, and it was quite busy last week, but also just people that spring to mind that were fantastic in the Zoom are Sylvia and Adriana. You guys were excellent. You were very responsive to everything. You know, you're my peeps. Let's keep going with it. I love the Wednesday live. So don't forget, you guys, on Facebook, 7:30 a.m. Wednesdays, I do a live workout, 20 minutes HIIT training, and it is recorded so people can look at it anytime.
We still have the Zoom link on the...
We do. We have the Zoom link as well. If you want to join in Zoom, the reason that I love the Zoom is just because I can look at your technique. So it just means that I can have a look at how you're moving. So I know that Shani was talking about her core activation and other things that she was a bit worried about just in her general training. So things like that, if you just join in and I can have a look at what you're doing, I can at least give you some real-time feedback as well as our Technique Tuesday now as well. So don't forget to... There are two ways that you can have access to us to have a look at what's going on.
And where can people find the link?
Oh, it's on Facebook, on the Zoom link. And the forum.
And the forum.
Those, yeah.
Yeah. So the Zoom link, you'll be able to find it pinned to the top of the training forum thread on the website.
Yes.
All right. But I think in general, you know, talking about our good news, it's great to see everyone getting involved in our weekly topics that we launched last week. You know, specifically things like...
Awesome.
Like Meal Prep Sunday, that got quite popular where everyone was posting photos of their meal prep. So it's great to see everyone's getting organized with their training, you know, getting ready to do their tax return or get ready to do their challenge and being organized, which is just awesome to see because, you know, that saying, you know, you either prepare to win or you prepare to fail.
Yeah, right? True.
Or prepare to succeed or prepare to fail. So, you know, if you put in that time now to plan your week, you know, then the challenge is easy. You don't even think about it.
Mm.
But if you're, you know, stumbling over the line, of course, we're not going to get great results from that. But look, let's talk about our next segment, which is Coach's Corner.
Yes, Coach's Corner.
Coach's Corner. So in this segment, you know, Nick and I are going to offer just a couple of tips around a topic related to fitness, health, challenge, anything in between. Mm-hmm. But Nick, do you want to kick us off with your Coach's Corner tip?
I would love to talk about sleep today. Sleep is one of my favorite things. I think a lot of us love sleep, but we don't really sometimes know how to approach sleep. Sleep itself needs to be approached with almost the same dedication as you approach your training and nutrition. Really, you've actually got to work on it. I know that you can fall asleep, you know, and you might not even think about it, but what's your sleep quality like? What time do you go to bed? How much sleep do you get? That can all affect your body composition results, your training in the gym, which, I mean, that leads to your body composition. It also, if you don't get enough sleep, your hunger levels rise as well. So that's another thing. I also think that, yeah, people don't, a really good way to be mindful about it is to think of, I know we say, take your screens away. We say that and people go, oh, but I need it for work or I need it for this and that. When you actually do take it away, and perhaps if you even read a book or something before you go to sleep, it helps you so much to get good quality sleep. So I would suggest just look at your sleep hygiene. That's what we call it. So just everything around your sleep, leading up to your sleep, and really just prioritize that, because recovery is where the gains are made, right?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And, you know, we get most of our recovery from sleep anyway, right?
Well, we do. We do. And the thing is, it's free.
Mm.
It doesn't cost anything. So if you're worried about anything like that, it doesn't actually, it's not expensive. So the thing is, I completely understand as you were saying, you know, before we tax, as your life gets busier, more obstacles come in the way of that sleep. So you might find, here's me saying as a mum, you might find that, you know, when your baby is born, it might be a bit harder to get a little bit of sleep. So you might have to implement some strategies such as having a nap during the day occasionally or things like that, you know. And so I think people who have kids, you know, sometimes you have to really try and find a time when you can switch off. So maybe you think that you might want to watch some television, but it might be like heading towards 10 o'clock at night. And even though we know you deserve to watch television, it's just sometimes the better choice to just go to sleep. Speaking from someone who knows.
You know, you listening to this podcast can't see this, but that entire time Nick was looking me dead in the eyes like she was talking to my future.
Right? I was talking to your future. But I don't want to be one of those people that tells you, but I'm saying prepare now.
Prepare now. So just,
yeah, because I don't know what you're like when you don't get a good night's sleep. I mean, probably you can last a day or two, not too bad, but like if you don't get quality sleep, do you?
Yeah, I'm a mess. I can't focus. Yeah. Well, if you're listening to this, unsure, I'm expecting a child in about 3-4 months. My first child, so I think my life's going to change quite dramatically mm-hmm. over the next couple of months.
We're here for you.
Especially when it comes to sleep time for Coach Steve. But, you know, even just talking about that, so my partner, Laura, she's, you know, 24 weeks pregnant now mm-hmm. and, you know, starting to show and starting to get those aches and pains, mm-hmm. right? So now we've kind of developed a little bit of a ritual when we are going to bed where we'll have a little bit of a stretch next to our bed before we go into bed, right? It's a great way to wind down.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially, you know, within this challenge lifestyle, or heck, even just being a young person, like we're always connected. So we always find ourselves, you know, like scrolling through Facebook or Instagram. Wow. I might be asking questions, you know, it's 9 o'clock at night, those types of things. So for me, I charge my phone in another room. Yeah. So I'm not, you know, if I'm tossing and turning in the middle of the night, I'm not inclined to roll over and open up my phone and start answering questions.
Which
or anything
I did
like
the
that.
Other night.
Yeah. Answering at 2 in the morning, Nick.
That's because of comp prep, like that's a different thing.
That's a different
thing.
You don't
sleep. But
so now, you know, when we are going to bed, my partner and I will do a little bit of stretching on the bed. So we'll just dump our leg on the bed, stretch the hamstrings,
really, and
then bend the knee and start stretching through the glute. We'll stretch through the quad, and then we'll go through like to the ensuite and stretch through our pecs and stuff like that. Mm. So it's a great way for, you know, us to have a little play around and help each other stretch. But also with her being pregnant, you know, having those aches and pains that happen in your hips and your back and those types of things. So even for yourself, if you have some sort of wind down routine, you know, you have an ensuite, you're brushing your teeth, you start stretching through your pecs on the door frame, and then maybe stretch your hamstrings on your bed and then whatever, and then you finally go to bed. So a nice way to wind down.
And even just recently, I've implemented even more of a sleep strategy, and that is just because coming up to comps, you feel a bit anxious, so it's very much time to bring everything out. So I've got a magnesium cream for my feet.
Your feet.
And a nice little lavender roll-on thing for just my wrists and behind my neck.
Mm-hmm.
And then what else do I have? Now I've forgotten. But those two things are really fantastic. Just really nice to wind you down. So speaking of that winding down routine.
I like that. Did you know that magnesium is better absorbed through the skin than through the digestive system?
Yes. Yes, even though I'm slamming it into the digestive system as well. Yeah, I'm obsessed with magnesium. Mm. So once again, that's all about recovery. Again, that's fantastic. So, and also magnesium baths mm-hmm. as well. So mm-hmm. see, what a routine if you could implement a magnesium bath, magnesium feet. And you're stretching.
I haven't found a bath that I fit in a really long time. I either choose like my legs are in or like my chest is in. Like
you might have to when you get your new house eventually get
one of those like deep baths one of those like bath spa things.
So. Well, something like that because I feel like that's just great for recovery, especially with your weights and things that you do.
Look, I want to talk a little bit about training. Mm-hmm. Right, and I think I'm on a little bit of a mission lately to get everyone better at training, right? Because often we like to put nutrition up on a pedestal, saying that that's the be all and end all, and often we kind of push training to the side. But what I find happens within training is that we're really good at making ourselves tired, right? You know, if you want a good workout, go do 500 burpees and make yourself tired.
We've all learned how to do that, and there's basically a place on every corner that will help you do that.
Yeah. And getting tired isn't going to get you great results. It isn't going to train you. You know, you're going to be working out your body, right? You're just going to be, you know, spinning the wheels, but you're not really upgrading your car. You're not really training your body. You're not really improving your performance. And ultimately, within the challenge, we want to be focusing on building our muscle, right? Mm. And if we're just spinning our wheels, you know, great, we're expending energy. Sure, you might lose some body weight, but we're not getting that toned and ripped shape that we're aiming for. And you're eventually going to be in a position where you're skinny fat, you're going to lose muscle, you're going to decrease your metabolic output, and then be stuck in this kind of whirlwind of nothing, you know, this rut where you're not getting anywhere. Yeah. So here's my vendetta, and it starts now, where I'm going to be helping in any way I can improve everyone's ability to train. Now, my biggest tip for you to improve your training is to film yourself, right? Not for vanity reasons, not to post on Instagram, not to post on Facebook, not to show your friends or anything like that, or not even to boast. Training or filming yourself training is a great reflective tool because it's all about reflection and about learning, okay? So when we're talking about technique, unfortunately, there's no one best technique, right? Every person's body is different, you know, like morphology, like hip morphology, like different structures, like everyone's, let's say with a squat, everyone's stance is going to be different. Everyone's legs are different. Everyone's torso is different. So ultimately, the technique isn't one uniform. Everyone has to do it this exact way, which is hard because I know that people listening to this or people in the fitness world want to be able to do it the right way, but the right way doesn't exist. The right way exists for you.
Okay. Exactly. And I think sometimes in a group fitness class or something, people will say a certain cue and then everyone thinks that that's the only way to do it.
Yeah. Mm. So we can't really be dogmatic about it where there's one right way. But, you know, there are some principles that we can follow. And most of it's around physics. And most of us aren't really trained in physics. I'm not trained in physics, a bit of biomechanics. But most of it's around physics about, you know, what's the most optimal way to move. And that could be things like center of gravity and levers and these types of things. But we don't need to get our head wrapped around that. I don't expect you to be doing math on how your squat angles are, right? Unless you're into that. That's cool as well. I like good old bar paths.
Yeah.
But I think the best way to reflect on your technique is to film yourself. And I do it now. And you'll actually kind of see it in my Instagram where I would, you know, film myself, post it online, great. But what I do, so if I post one video on Instagram, I probably have another 20 that I don't post that I watch and reflect on. So I'd watch my video, see how it looks, right? And I kind of go through a little bit of a checklist, which I'll go over now. So this is my checklist, and it's actually outlined on your training template under technique tracking. So in that tool on your training template, there's actually some videos where I actually analyze my own technique for you and give you a guide on how you can analyze your technique, regardless of the exercise. Let that be a squat, a hip thrust, a bicep curl, a push-up, whatever it is, you can follow the same checklist, okay? So when you're watching back your video, firstly, start looking at what I call ground contact. So whatever's touching the ground while you're doing that work, that exercise. So in a squat, it's your feet touching the ground. In a push-up, it's your hand and your feet because you push up. If it's something like a chin-up, you're on a bar. So that's what's touching the ground is your hands on the bar. So first step is to look at your ground contact. Now, one big thing that I see in movements like a deadlift is that people use really fancy shoes that are really cushiony.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And those shoes are designed so when you put pressure down on them that they propel you forward. So if you're going to go do a deadlift with, let's say, your body weight, I don't know, you're like me, 100 kilos, you've got 100 kilos in your hands, you're at 200 kilos, the pressure that you're putting into the ground, those shoes are going to want to propel you forward. So no wonder you're doing the deadlift and your feet are just rocking back and forth. You're losing your stability, you're losing your power. Other aspects is, let's say, in a squat, let's say you have good shoes on, but you might see that your feet are moving, right? Which is, again, losing power. So look at where your ground contact is to start to analyze your stability.
Yeah.
Next, second on the domain would be your bracing. So bracing is closely linked to stability, but you need to be able to create an ability of bracing, kind of like in a, you know, like a rugby tackle, a scrum. You know, those guys are bracing and they go, and they hit each other, right? You want to be able to create that bracing element in any part of your body so that you can create force. An analogy that we use is like firing a cannon out of a canoe. If you think of a boat on the water and you go to like shoot a cannon, the cannon isn't going to go very far. But if the cannon is on the ground, nice and stable, you're going to be able to create power. So think about that. You need to be able to brace yourself to create power. The next step when you're reflecting on your technique, number three, would be to look at the bar path and the speed of the movement. Okay, so ideally, you know, we want to be moving straight up and down, like against gravity. And if you end up moving that bar in different shapes, like a C shape or an S shape, you're just basically making the bar path longer than what it can be. Next, we can look at the speed, about how quickly that bar moves or dumbbell moves or your body moves. Like in a push-up, your body is now the weight. So you may find there's certain sticking points or ease of movement, right? That which leads me onto that point number four, which is the overall ease of movement, where sometimes you might be doing a squat and it feels really hard while you're doing it, but when you watch yourself, it looks really easy and you go, oh, wow. But then other times you watch yourself and you see how hard you make it look. And you're like, oh, geez, you made that look really difficult.
Why does it look so hard? Right? Yeah.
And then you go, okay, well, why did it look so difficult? Well, yeah, okay, you had your arms splayed out, your feet were wobbling, and you're shaking the whole way up. It's like, okay, well, maybe the weight's too heavy. Maybe you'll be better off bracing, moving, adjusting, these types of things. And then finally, my kind of like big thing would be like this not quite right principle or NQR. And that could be something that just looks a little bit odd. So in the example that I use in the training tracking tool on your training template, while I'm doing these squats, my right knee starts doing a little bit of the Elvis dance. You know what I'm talking about, the Elvis dance? Like the knee comes in and out, right? Yeah. So that is kind of like this NQR. It's like, that knee shouldn't be turning in and out while you're squatting. Not quite right. So for me, I would need to go back and try to find a way to fix that. That could be, you know, incorporating some pause squats or some tempo squats or maybe lighten the load or something like that. And that could be similar in any movement pattern. Like, oh, that's not quite right. You shouldn't be swinging or your elbows shouldn't be flared out like that or your head shouldn't be bopping forward. Like, that's a bit odd. It's an NQR principle. So they're my five steps to reflect on your technique. It's all about reflection and learning because you might need to start trialing new ways of doing things. Maybe you'll benefit from actually increasing the load, right? Because kind of like a pendulum, you know, when it's heavier, it's more stable. So, you know, Nick, when you were powerlifting, if you're doing like a bench press and you're warming up, that bar feels wonky.
Definitely.
But then once you go closer to your working weight, the bar feels more stable.
Absolutely.
Right? Same as like a deadlift. You know, if I'm warming up and I've got, I don't know, like 100 kilos on the bar. Sorry if that's my warm up. Like that bar is moving around a lot. But then if I'm getting closer to, you know, 150, 200, the bar is nice and close to me because it feels like a pendulum. It doesn't move as much. So these are ways where, you know, you might actually benefit from going a little bit heavier. You might benefit from going lighter. You might benefit from taking your shoes off. You know, we don't have those answers unless you trial it, record yourself, and then reflect. Yes, right.
I have one more, I just have to say it, which is your connection with the actual barbell. Like really watch where your hand placement is. And also when you're squatting, I don't know how to describe it for the podcasting, but like some people squat with their hands kind of off the bar because they're used to squatting light. Hold the bar, respect the bar.
Yeah.
Spend some time finding out where you're meant to hold it. Hold on to it, approach the bar with respect.
I like that. I like that. One of the things that always baffled me when I was first a personal trainer was how people grab the bar where, you know, for me, I look at the bar and if I'm going to pick it up, I'm like, all right, I see the little knurling, so I'm going to grab my bar evenly and deadlift. But so often this isn't something that people think about. When they go to deadlift, they just grab the bar and I would have to stop them and be like, whoa, your hands are completely opposite. Did you not know that you're not in the middle of the bar? And then they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, see, like, you know, there's like, it's symmetrical. There's like, you know, the smooth part and the knurling of it. And there's like rings, like grab the bar evenly each side, because if you grab it off center, of course, the bar is going to be wonky going up and then, you know, you lose your bracing and those type of things. But all these little things that kind of are normal for us now are things that I don't expect everyone to know straight away, right?
That's right. And just even just that approaching of the bar and sort of thinking of it as being something that you keep close to you at all times, that's just something that I think if you can instill that in yourself from the very start, you'll have a successful training future.
Because, training career, yes.
You can't really stuff it up. If the bar's close to you, you know, that's a good way to start, I think.
All right, Nick, let's move on to our next segment where we're going to talk about some questions that have come up on the training forum or the Facebook group or on Instagram or anything in between. Yeah. So we've got a couple that we've got to go through. Okay?
Yes, we do.
So so first up, let's talk about a question that comes up with supplements, right? And we're going to be talking about the idea of, you know, should you take supplements on days that you aren't working out or aren't training? Now, a lot of questions that come up with supplements, there is information, and then frequently asked questions are asked frequently, and there is FAQ and guides and everything on our challenge website. So if you haven't already, please take the time to check out the supplement guide that can be found under the nutrition tab on the website. So where you download your nutrition template or the PDF, just near there, you'll find supplement guide. Take a moment just to read through the supplement guide. We've created like a little cheat sheet of when to take what supplements at what time and what the serving size is and everything like that. We've even created a vitamins and minerals cheat sheet as well. So if you're unsure about vitamins and minerals and such, and you want to start dabbling in some, you know, multivitamin or vitamin B and things, check out our vitamin and mineral cheat sheet as well. But, you know, this question often comes up where, you know, individuals might feel that, you know, they need to take supplements because maybe they have a magic effect on our body, which might not be completely correct. Remember, supplements, you know, can't replace a full and balanced diet and really just make up that last little percent, okay? So when the question comes up of, should I take supplements on my rest days? My next question is, well, it depends, okay? Because some supplements, you know, depending on what they are just really simply food. Take protein, for example, it's just dehydrated milk, right? So, it's higher in protein than carbohydrates or fat, so we call it protein powder, but it's really just dehydrated milk, right? Other supplements could just be, you know, broken down fatty acids, and we call it CLA, right? So we need to understand that, you know, they're not really pharmaceutical aids, they're just food products, okay? So talking about protein powders as an example, like a whey protein, you could have that on days that you aren't training as a meal replacement, or you could have it on days that you are training as like a peri-workout nutrition, peri meaning around your workout, either before or after, okay? That's one option. Something like a nighttime protein helps to increase our overall protein intake for the day. So you may find that you are having adequate protein throughout the day, and you may choose to omit a nighttime protein because you might not need it because you have all your protein throughout the day. You can find this information on your nutrition template under protein. You go, okay, well, I'm having 200 grams of protein. I'm a 60 kilo woman. That's, you know, over 3 grams per kilo of body weight of protein. I don't need to have additional protein such as my nighttime protein. Maybe that's you. Okay, but for most of us, we benefit from a nighttime protein so that we can continue to be what's called anabolic or growing muscle throughout the evening. Okay, so you may benefit from having that even on your off days, because off days are our building days, right? Other products such as, let's say, like a creatine works through a loading phase on our muscle. So for something like a creatine, you want to take that daily so that you can reach saturation levels. Because if you don't take it, it's kind of like you're going to reduce your overall saturation on your muscles. It's going to take longer to reach saturation levels. Other products, let's say like CLA or BCAAs and other amino acids and such, they're kind of like vitamins and minerals. You know, we want to be taking vitamins and minerals every day, regardless if we're working out, if we're going to work, if we're just going to sleep in all day, or if we're going to the beach. We want to be taking those vitamins and minerals daily. Now, all of these information, mainly found on the label of the product you buy. So take a moment, read the label of the product, or check out the supplement guide as well. So in summary, do you need to take supplements on rest days? Well, it depends. Sports supplements that are designed around your workout, you wouldn't need to take those because you're not working out that day. So you don't need workout supplements, right? You don't need to take a pre-workout if you're not going to work out, right? But other supplements, you may benefit from taking them on rest days so that you can see the benefits of those things when you do go to train. Okay.
Good. Very good.
That was a well-rounded answer.
Very good.
Nick, do you want to take our next question? So
I would love to.
So this next question comes up generally as, should I eat before I train?
Yes.
Okay. So if someone came to you and said that, what would you tell them?
Well, look, I would break this question down into, let's just assume that it's a morning question, because the thing is, just say someone's saying that in the afternoon, obviously you've had some sort of food. So I personally would refrain from eating about half an hour before I work out. That's just me. But before that, I always have something to eat before I'm working out, and I would really strongly encourage other people to. If people are used to training fasted, then that's fine. But I would also strongly encourage you to give it a go, because what it allows you to do is actually train harder, which is then going to give you better results because it gives you energy. So should I eat before I train? You don't have to eat a massive meal. That's not the thing. It's just a little bit of fuel, a little bit of fuel for your muscles, a little bit of muscle glycogen, something like a banana. We always say banana. I don't banana. Just because bananas are awesome. Mm-hmm. So something like that, because also a lot of people can stomach banana quite well, even mm-hmm. in the morning. You know, mm-hmm. you can actually pop it in a little shake, or you can eat it and they digest quite well. So I would say yes, but also it depends, because mm-hmm. it's not a requirement. But let's just put it this way. Nothing, you don't gain anything from not eating before, mm-hmm. whereas eating before will actually help you to train harder. Mm-hmm. So therefore, just by process of elimination, I would say yes to a client. The only thing would be, say my mum before she does a spin class tends to feel actually sick mm-hmm. if she's eaten. So something that's a little bit higher intensity, or if you're a beginner and it's very, very hard on your body at first and you feel like you might not be able to keep it down, then that's a time when, as long as you didn't feel faint or anything like that, I would probably refrain from eating too much. But maybe just a light piece of fruit, you know, something really simple. I've always tried to encourage mum to eat a light piece of fruit, but she won't. She's also like 60-something, so she's okay. But in general, I would say yes.
Yeah. If I was to add on just a little bit, do you like The Office, the TV show? Do you remember that episode where they're doing the run for like rabies or something right? And Michael, the Steve Carell character, he goes to carb load like minutes before the event, right? And he has like a carbonara.
Yeah.
And then he's just struggling through the whole race. And then Toby's being able to like run the race, but then he's just like, you know, struggling. That's so funny. So, you know, that idea, what, you know, our parents told us before we go into the water when we go to swim, you know, you may not benefit from eating right before you exercise, especially if it's a big hearty meal.
Yeah.
Where you might feel some gastrointestinal complaints, right? And that could be like a really hearty pasta. You're probably not going to go to a spin class straight after.
Do you
that.
Know, I have, only because I used to teach so many, there was one time when I had like a tuna thing just before I got on the bike to teach. And I just thought, look, possibly that's not a good idea to have that tuna before I'm doing a spin class. No. So I've done it too. I've done stupid things with nutrition, like not timing it correctly.
Yeah. But then like in saying that, I have a habit now, a routine before I go and train. I'm often looking for a meal or having something before I train. But I think it kind of depends on like the intensity. Like if you're going to go do like a HIIT class, like a body pump class, or like, I don't know, a boot camp, you might not be wanting to have a really big meal because the up, down, running around, jumping, all the things, that can cause some stomach complaints. But something small, like a piece of fruit, easy to digest because it's high in water. Yeah. So if you have, to say, like, I don't know, an orange, an apple, a banana, something like that, that can be really helpful before you train at any time because it's easy to digest, enters your bloodstream, you've got some glucose flying around your blood, and you're able to do all the things, run and jump, right?
Yeah, you're able to do it well. So not just be there, not just be in the room while it's there.
Yeah.
There's a difference between doing it and doing it well,
mm-hmm.
and doing it to the best of your abilities. And you'll never know unless you fuel yourself.
Yeah. If I was to add a little bit more to that, talking about during the day, preferably before you train, you'd want to be having at least like one meal a few hours before you train. Okay. So if you're training at, I don't know, lunchtime, maybe 2 hours before you train for optimal meal timing and performance, you want to be having like a hearty, like carby meal. So for those who are a little bit more advanced with their nutrition and want to try to get the most out of their training session, try to bias some sort of carbohydrate maybe 2 hours before you train, and then have some sort of easy to digestible carbohydrate maybe that 30 minutes to an hour before you train, and you'll find some improvements in your training performance because you have some glucose or some glycogen replenishment. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So if you're training in the evening, even better because you have a few meals before you, so you're nice and fueled. So we do find that that afternoon training session tends to be better in the research, but in the evening, we often find that people get too tired to actually get a meaningful outcome.
So then that could probably cancel that out. So don't stress about it. Just do it whenever.
Yeah. So I think it really depends. For like most kind of beginner intermediates, it doesn't really matter. If you're looking at that advanced performance side of things, you may benefit from timing your carbohydrate around your meal.
Definitely. I've used to train at 7 every morning, and I'm so glad that I've change that around and actually fueled myself a little bit better because my performance is a lot better now.
All right. Let's talk about another training question that comes up a few different ways. And it's often around what weight should I use when I'm training, right? Or what's the beginner weights, or, how heavy should I lift, or, what's the normal, or something like that. And this is a really classic beginner question because we don't know, something like a bicep curl. It's like, well, do I choose 5 kilos, 10 kilos. That guy over there is using 20 kilos. Should I be doing 20 kilos as well? And my answer to these types of questions is that it really is dependent on you. So there's no prescription on what weight you have to use because everyone's strength level is different. And heck, even the same exercise, you could use different weights and get a similar result, okay? Now, the ultimate goal with resistance training is that we're trying to get close to technical failure. Technical failure means that you are unable to do another rep safely targeting that muscle group, okay? So let's say a bicep curl, you've got 10 kilos, you could do it for 10 reps, and then maybe on that 11th rep, you need to swing it, you use your shoulders and your chest to help you get it up. Okay, that's technical failure. You failed technically to complete another bicep curl to target your bicep, okay? We want to reach technical failure with most of our exercises, or really, really close to technical failure. Many of us don't really get close to failure at all because either we're too scared or something like that, but that's a different conversation, right? Now, some exercises, you could use a lighter weight and get to technical failure at maybe 30 reps, or you can use a heavier weight and get to technical failure at maybe 10 reps, right? An example, back with that bicep curl, you can use 10 kilos and do 30 reps until you start feeling the burn and you're unable to do more, or you can grab, 20 kilos and do maybe 5 reps and you're unable to do any more. Both are quite similar in outcomes where we see good muscle growth with whatever weight we use. So it really comes down to a weight that we feel comfortable with. There's also a prescription of reps on your training templates, and we want you to aim for a weight that you can hit that rep range while getting close to failure. So for example, your rep range might be 10 to 15 reps, quite large. So choose a weight where you can reach failure within that 10 to 15 reps. If there's multiple sets, you want to be trying to hit that technical failure in that target rep range. If you are failing at set number 2 or set number 3 to reach that target rep range, you've gone too heavy. So for example, a bench press is a classic one. You might have a 10 to 15 rep range. That first set, you're able to take it to 15 happy days, but that second set, you're so gassed, you get to maybe like 8 reps and then like 3 reps, okay? You've gone too heavy, too hard, because you've overreached in that first set, okay? If you're easily able to reach that target rep range nowhere near failure, you could either increase the weight, right? So in a bench press, you can add more weight. On a dumbbell, you can add more weight. Or if you're training at home or doing a body weight like exercise, you may choose to progress how many reps you're doing. So that might mean in a push-up, you do 20 push-ups instead of 15 push-ups to get close to technical failure. Okay. So at the end of the day, what weight should you use? Well, it all depends. It depends on what's prescribed on your training template, and it depends on your own strength. It depends on what equipment you have available to you. The main idea is that we want to get close to technical failure where we're stressing the muscle so that it can't do anymore, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Anything to add on?
No, I think that's pretty good. I think that, look, don't be afraid of grabbing a heavier weight and seeing, and then if you can't do it correctly, then you can put the weight away. It's no big deal. It's a bit of experimentation. Once you get to sort of, once you get to the point where you can kind of look at all the different weights in the gym and go, that's my weight, that's my weight, that's my weight. That takes a few years. Mm. It really does. Yeah. It's just something that comes after a long time that you sort of know, and you might even know, like in a machine, what level you might do. But it's just experimentation. It's actually a little bit of fun.
It is.
So it's good fun to see. There's no stress. Also, just regarding other people's weights, you've got to think of what they weigh, how much muscle mass they have, everything. So you just can't compare.
Yeah.
Like comparing an apple to a banana or something. You just can't. So there's no point in comparing. Even if it's your best friend and you're there, they do the challenge with you or something, it doesn't matter as long as you're getting the best outcome that you can.
Yeah. You know, adding on to that idea of comparing, you know, you it's really difficult to do that. And an example is even just myself. I would say that I've got relative strength, but there's always people stronger than me, right? And on the weekend, I went to a powerlifting event, right? And here I was thinking that I was, you know, strong, being able to, you know, deadlift twice my body weight or more, or squat more, whatever it was. But these guys, you know, they were opening up a squat at, you know, 280 kilos or bench pressing 140 kilos as an opener. And, you know, I saw one guy benching close to 200 kilos. Like, these numbers are just ridiculous. Yeah. And, if I looked at that and thought that I was a failure because I can't bench press 200 kilos or deadlift 340 kilos or whatever it was, that's the wrong way to approach that, exactly. Right? So, you know, you can only compare yourself to what you were yesterday and work on improving that over time.
That's right. And those people specifically train those three movements.
Yeah.
And that is all they do.
Right.
They can't sometimes, I love them, but sometimes can't have move in other ways at all other than those three movements. Yeah. So don't forget that.
Don't forget that.
They're fun, but if you come across a powerlifter anywhere, they're the best to chat to. So they're really good. That's just another conversation.
All right, Nick, do you want to take away this last question?
Yes.
And it comes up in a few different ways, but it's often around this idea of how many calories should I burn per workout?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take this away?
So I think that we should burn the machines that have the calories written on them. I just think that there are other markers. People love markers. They love to go into the gym and set themselves markers, things that they can possibly even beat for the next time, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So if calories is one of those, it isn't really going to be indicative of any sort of progress. So if it's something that you've got in your head, often, you know, gyms will advertise, say, spin classes and say, you can burn 600 calories. Well, firstly, every single human is different. Secondly, it's not going to be accurate whatsoever. So we love you to use your fitness trackers for your 10,000 steps because that's accurate. You know, that's fairly, well, what it is it indicates that you've moved enough for that day.
Mm-hmm.
But any type of calorie burn isn't really also going to indicate what's going on in your body if you're after fat loss. Mm-hmm. It's just not, because you know, with our calories in, calories out, that actually doesn't really equate to the exercise that you're doing. So somebody said, I went into the gym and I only burnt 200 calories. Well, guess what? You know what? Actually, a really big thing to realize is that you probably don't burn that many calories when you're in the gym. Mm. That's the other thing. It's that exercise that you do outside of the gym, that walking that we insist upon, that's the type of place where you're going to see a little bit more calorie burn. So don't get distressed if you go in there and you do all the prescribed workouts to the best of your abilities, leading on from what you said before, Steve, not going in half-assing, looking at your phone, doing things like that. If you can honestly, hand on your heart, say that you've done it to the best of your abilities and you have all the markers that suggest that you're training super hard, then you've got nothing to worry about. Don't stress about the caloric burn. It's just a tool like any other tracker that people like to use on a machine. You may as well say 45 minutes instead of saying 600 calories. Mm. You know, you may as well say, I want to use it for 45 minutes. And then next time you use it for 46 minutes or something along those lines. Because calories, in my opinion, and I think like across the board, are irrelevant in that context.
Mm. No, I agree. And if I was to steal the answer and the question like I did before, you know, adding a few things, like one, like our fitness trackers are really poor at measuring our energy expenditure. I actually wrote a nice article about this where I looked at some research. You can find that on the resources section of the website where I compared a few different fitness trackers. And some fitness trackers, in terms of energy expenditure, are off by up to 50%, which is huge. 50% incorrect. That means if your fitness tracker is telling you that you've expended 3,000 calories worth of energy for that day, you know, that could be up to 50% wrong. So meaning that, you know, maybe that 1,500 or 2,000 calories is what you've actually expended, yeah, right?
If you try and eat that back for any reason, then you'll be in a pretty dodgy position.
Yeah.
If you're trying to lose weight, lose body fat.
Yeah. So that leads me on to that next point, which you just took there, Nick, was, you know, eating back calories, which is this idea where we go, oh, well, if I've burnt 500 calories for my workout, that means I could eat 500 calories, right? It's like, well, no, not quite. So firstly, there's a high chance of error in your energy expenditure when you're working out.
Mm.
Next, formal exercise actually expends really low amounts of energy, right? So you running on a treadmill for half an hour, okay, great, you burnt a couple of hundred calories of energy, but you compare that to just going for a walk, it ends up being almost identical, right? Mm. So firstly, we're probably wrong. We often overestimate our energy expenditure, right? And then when we go to eat back and put using quotation marks, we often underreport our energy intake where we go, oh, I've spent 500 calories. Well, you probably haven't. You only probably expended 300 calories. And then I chose to eat back 500 calories of those. Like, you probably didn't. You probably ate 600 calories now. Mm. So now you're actually in an energy surplus despite you thinking that you were doing the right thing and eating back those calories.
That is why certain programs tend to people leave them going, oh, hang on, I put on weight, because they make you super duper hungry. Mm. You think that you've burnt a lot of calories because it just makes you hungry. Hungry, hungry, hungry. The exercise, it sort of just sends off this frenzy of hunger in you, and you end up probably eating double what has happened in that exercise class.
Mm.
Whereas at least with weight training that's structured, you are building muscle. Muscle wants calories.
Mm-hmm.
So you're at least going in the right direction, because if you've got some muscle, you can then afford to eat some calories.
Yeah. And muscle is really expensive tissue to maintain. Yes. So it is very calorie hungry.
That's why we want you to train, even though we say it doesn't burn calories, because we're not doing that bit for that. We're doing it to build muscle.
That's right.
Mm.
You know, if I was to add an extra tip on the idea of calories in versus calories out, you know, sometimes you'll benefit from not actually looking at the number, right? And I know this sounds counterintuitive, because you're going, well, Steve, you're talking about consuming less calories than you're expending. You're talking about, you know, eating 2,000 calories but expending 2,500. So you're in this energy deficit. Of course, we need to care about the numbers. And it's like, well, okay, you would probably benefit from turning into a little bit of like an algebra equation, right? So if you were to uniform your calorie intake, you know, following the nutrition template where it's quite modular, you know, we've got servings of protein, servings of energy, servings of fruits and vegetables. If you were to uniform that, you could then call that your energy intake as X, no matter what it is. Maybe it's 1,800, maybe it's 2,000, maybe it's 1,500. Whatever it is, call it X energy intake. Then when we look at our energy expenditure, we can use a metric like our daily step count as a good way to get a good understanding of our overall energy expenditure. And we call that Y, right? So then we go, using pure algebra, you go X, you know, minus Y equals our body weight, was it, right? So if your body weight is going down, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Who cares what the number is of energy in and what the number is of energy out?
That's right.
But if your body weight is staying where it is, or if it's increasing, then you go, oh, well, okay, whatever I'm currently eating now, and then whatever I'm currently stepping now, I can either choose to eat fewer calories, right? So it's X minus 100, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you can do a few more steps that day. So you can have Y plus 100, where you do maybe an extra 100 steps around the block, or 1,000 steps. You do an extra walk at lunchtime. Or maybe around the food side of things, you choose to remove one serving of extra, such as, you know, some milk at breakfast or yeah, something like that. So you may benefit from turning it into a bit of an algebra equation rather than being really picky on the numbers itself, because often the numbers aren't 100% correct. And I know that sucks because we want to be more and more accurate as we can, but we need to allow for some variability with those numbers.
And also don't throw all the X's and Y's together at once. So don't go, right, that's it. I'm going to increase my steps to 20 and decrease my calories to, you know, 800 or something. That is a recipe for disaster. Otherwise, you know, that would be what the world is doing, and they'd be successful, and it's not good. So we want you to eat as much as you can and still get great results.
Going back to our tax return analogy, right? It's like someone who's just figured out that, oh, if I spend more money on work-related things, that means I can make more of a deduction, right? So then that person then goes and spend their entire salary on, I don't know, stationery at home, because they're like, oh, well, I need stationery at home, I might as well claim it as a tax deduction. So then you spend, I don't know, 60 grand, 100 grand on stationery, then you have no money to live, right? So of course you're going to be getting a bigger tax return because you're you know, spending more money in deductions, but then you're just going to have less money to live with. So sure, you might find ways to beat the system, but you probably face problems by trying to beat the system by throwing everything at the wall.
Your body will send you a roadblock at some point. It'll just put up a big roadblock and say, you know, closed.
Closed. That's the tax man being like, I want to see the receipts.
That's right. That dreaded call.
Yeah, the body keeps a score.
So
right?
Aren't you guys lucky that we spoke about tax today?
Do your taxes.
That's right. Everybody, do your taxes. You can't be scared now.
Well, look, Nick, let's wrap it up there. We've covered lots of topics this week in this weekly challenge podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks, guys.